Our next guest looks at the ways the military uses video game technology to recruit and train troops.
Corey Mead is with us. He's assistant professor of English at Root College in New York. His new book is Warplay: Video Games and the Future of Armed Conflict. He's a UW grad, by the way. Corey, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
And welcome back to Wisconsin.
Yeah, I know. It's great.
So why does an English professor tackle video games in the military?
Well, it started at Wisconsin, actually. There's a group of great folks over in the education department who are studying. They're literacy specialists, which is what I was, but they're studying the way in which video games represent a new form of literacy and sort of studying the why of why kids will, you know, spend 60 hours playing these extremely difficult video games, the sort of, you know, frustratingly pleasurable video games, but they won't spend 5 minutes reading a book. You know, so what is it about the learning principles in video games? And I thought that was interesting just because I was trying to relate to my students, kind of find out the kinds of the things that motivated them. And then, you know, when I found out the political aspect that the military was, you know, light years ahead in sort of adopting this and exploiting this technology for learning purposes, I just wanted to learn more. And that's what pushed me on that road.
Well, let's dive in. The military, as you write, does a lot of things with video games and simulations.
Yeah.
What are, starting with maybe the obvious, combat training, how does the military use video games to train people for combat?
For combat, one of the most common ways they're doing it today is through these massively multiplayer online games. They'll have, say, like 100 soldiers in a room, and they'll each have their own computer, but they're all networked, and they'll be playing what looks like a first-person shooter video game. And you know, the commander will be in the other room sort of guiding the action. And so they'll be taking them through the actual terrain that they're going to be deploying to in Afghanistan. And so they get the sense both of the feel of the place where they're actually going, but they're also training more for you know, tactical knowledge. So that's the most obvious form that jumps out at people. That's just one of the many ways they're using games.
So probably a lot of the soldiers playing these games may have played a video game, Call of Duty or Medal of Honor, at home. Are they in for a rude surprise when they come to the simulators the Army uses?
Well, it causes a lot of problems for the trainers because the people out of, you know, from what they told me, out of the 100 people or so in a room, maybe 20 will be pretty experienced gamers or hardcore gamers. And so what those people do when they jump on the training game is right away they start doing what they do in a commercial video game, which is to figure out how to break the system. So they turn around and see if they can shoot their commander, and they do whatever they can to unlock the secrets of the sim, which is not the point of the training for the commanders, right? So you've got that going on one end. On the other end are the people who spend the entire training session trying to figure out how to work the keyboard because they're not familiar with games. So, you know, much of the training session is simply getting people to acknowledge it as a training session or get them up to speed to be able to participate.
Well, you mentioned, I think, one of the instructors, a drill sergeant, saying a big surprise to people experience with his games is when they die.
Yes. That's, you know, he said that for a lot of the troops that do train on this, it's the first time they realize that they might die because they're used to these games, the commercial games, where if they die, they just reboot their avatar, and that doesn't happen in these games. If you die, if you sit down, you're out, and that's really frustrating for people, but it's also a real learning experience.
Does that get people to stop and think about the enormity of what they're going into, if they haven't already?
That's what the trainer said, yeah. You know, you have to talk to the soldiers themselves more about it. But I think it's the fact of the ways in which what they're bringing in terms of their knowledge of battle from their previous commercial video game use doesn't translate in the way that they imagine that it will.
The military has been at the cutting edge, you mentioned this, of video games. A lot of what came to be commercial video game technology started in the military. Talk about some of that history.
Well, the architecture itself, the technological architecture, is built on military-funded projects. And we can go back before that, and, you know, computers in general are built on military, you know, funded projects. The game industry and the first games were almost a happy or certainly an unexpected offshoot of computer engineering graduate students who were getting funded for other purposes and kind of in their spare time for fun built what was the first video game, this thing called Space War, which just came out of their love for science fiction. So essentially you had these MIT graduate students trying to entertain themselves in their off hours building what became the first game, and you know, and working on the technology that became what the entire commercial game industry grew out of.
Is there a sense, is it an agreed thing in the military that training on these simulators, training in these game worlds, actually helps prepare troops for what they would encounter in a real deployment?
It's become more accepted now. It's been a long, you know, for many years, sort of as, with the start of this more advanced kind of game-based training, it was really a few people, innovators within the military, who were pushing for this kind of thing. And they were facing resistance from the colonels and the generals, who were just put off by the idea of using anything that was considered a game, right? They thought it was ridiculous. But a lot of the people, you know, 12 years ago or 13 years ago when the war in Afghanistan started that were lower then are now the colonels themselves, right? And so there's a greater acceptance of what they think it can do.
And then more maybe controversially, you talk about how the military uses games for recruitment. They put the games out there, some of the, not the full simulations, I guess. What are they doing, and is it an effective tool?
The first game they developed for that was this game called America's Army, which first came out in 2002 and keeps being updated with new versions, was extremely effective when it came out. The idea behind it was, it was actually the Army's sort of top economist that came up with this idea. And the idea was, they look at it as getting the Army brand out there, right? And, you know, he uses phrases like they were competing for youth mind share with other possible jobs. And so the idea was to get kids when they were 12 or 13 and get this game directly to them without it being filtered through any other, what he calls mediators, without it being filtered through, you know, television or movies, so that he could get what he called the Army brand directly to these 12 and 13-year-olds and get them to start considering a career in the military, because he says, well, by the time they're 17, it's too late. You've lost them.
And America's Army isn't just America's Army anymore, right? Other countries have taken this
on. It's been hugely popular around the world, absolutely. And in fact, you know, the sort of blowback factor of that is that now other countries are using games modeled on America's Army to do their own form of recruiting. China is the most prominent example of that. They have a new game, and with the irony being that the enemy in the Chinese version of the game is the United States military.
And it's always, they only fight against American soldiers.
Exactly.
A bit ominous. Well, on a different note, we've talked about some of the combat simulators. That's not all they're doing with video games. PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. There are, I don't know if you'd call them games, but computer simulations. How do they use these things to help treat PTSD?
So the most popular one for PTSD is called Virtual Iraq / Virtual Afghanistan, just depending on where you were deployed. And basically, you sit at a table, there's two chairs, you're in one, and you're wearing a virtual reality helmet. And there's in front of you, there's a computer with the imagery is taken from a video game called Full Spectrum Warrior that Army developed. And the game is being programmed by your therapist, who's sitting right next to you, according to some of the stuff that relates to your traumatizing experience. And basically, over the course of several weeks and months, you are taken through your traumatizing experience again and again. You're talking through it with the therapist next to you, and each time they're adding more and more detail in and trying to bring you to a greater point of stress, so that eventually you're not dulled to the experience, but you stop being afraid of getting through the experience. You realize that you're going to get through each traumatizing event, right? And so in that sense, you lose the fear of having that memory again, that experience. And it's really an advanced version of talk therapy, where the visualization that you might do in regular therapy is enhanced by this, you know, 3D by the virtual reality technology and everything else. And I tried it. It's pretty powerful. And I wasn't even coming from a place of obviously having been traumatized in war.
And then other games, simulations helping make the transition to civilian life, where you have, remind me if I read this right, you have choices of how you interact with your spouse or whether you seek help for this issue or other.
Yeah, so there's a ton of issues with reintegration that they're finding, and the game, especially this company called Will Interactive in Maryland, is working to address all different kinds of reintegration issues. So some of it's like blended families, because there's so many divorces going on during deployment. So when you come back, if you blend your families, or any other number of games. And there's other games that are just being developed simply for the idea of getting soldiers to recognize the fact that maybe they are in need of some help. And so sort of gently saying, if you need help, here are some resources you can turn to. You know, if you're feeling these symptoms, you might want to think about seeking some assistance.
Corey Mead is with us. We're talking about his new book, War Play, Video Games and the Future of Armed Conflict.
And we want to hear from you on this one. Where you are you in the military? Have you trained with the kind of simulations our guest is talking about? And what do you make of how the military is increasingly using video games? You can call us 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or post on our Facebook page. It's Central Time on WPR.
This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Corey Mead is with us. His new book is War Play, Video Games and the Future of Armed Conflict.
And you can join the conversation about the military's use of video games and simulations to recruit and train troops. You can give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll go right to the phones now. We have Joanne in Milwaukee. Joanne, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Did you have a question for our guest?
My question is, he was explaining how the video games are being used for people who are deployed in Iraq and Afghanistan, and that it seems to be working well. What about same sort of use for PTSD victims of Vietnam? Some of those men have been suffering for 40 years, and perhaps they could benefit from this too.
Joanne,
and
thanks.
I'll say the answer will be here.
That's an interesting question. Corey, are they spinning it off from the Army maybe to VA hospitals to treat Vietnam-era veterans?
Well, it's funny because Virtual Iraq and Virtual Afghanistan, which I mentioned, were built off of this game called Virtual Vietnam, which was developed for that very purpose to help Vietnam veterans. But it never really got taken. Like, they did some initial brief studies, and it seemed to be doing well. They got positive results, and then it just kind of died. So at this stage, the game, you know, getting the VAs to adopt Virtual Iraq and Virtual Afghanistan has been much more the push than reaching back to the Vietnam era. But there was this very promising game that just sort of was let go. So I guess that might tell you something about the attitude toward the treatment of vets. I'm not sure.
Or was it an attitude toward, as you mentioned earlier, not taking the idea of a game, in quotes, seriously?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and funding issues, too. I mean, that's, you know, especially when it comes to the VA. Anyway, it's all driven by economics. And so, you know, the only reason that games now are being accepted to the extent that they are is because they're economically feasible. Before computing power was as cheap as it became sort of in the mid to late 1990s, you know, there wasn't the wide use of it simply because they didn't consider it affordable. Although it's ironic when you compare it to a large weapon system, of course.
Thanks for the call, Joanne. We've got Sam with us now in Appleton. Sam, hi.
Hey, Corey. Wanted to thank you for great class at UW-Madison.
Is this Sam Radford?
201. Yep, Sam Radford.
Hey, man,
a lot of fun in that class. And my question was, is it just the Army using these simulators, or is it other branches of the military as well?
Well, first of all, I should say that Sam Radford was obviously the worst student I ever had. No, it's all the branches are using the military. The Army has been way in the lead of using it, but the other branches are catching up.
Thanks a lot for the call, Sam. Hope you did well in Corey's class.
No, he got an F.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, now we know. It's out there.
No, I'm just kidding.
Well, I wanted to talk maybe about some of the more controversial elements of some of this. There's concern outside of the military, in the civilian world, about people playing military-themed video games, computer games, maybe being desensitized to violence. Is there concern within the armed forces or maybe from outside the armed forces that this is in some way desensitizing our troops?
I mean, I've seen a lot of concern outside the armed forces. Absolutely. That's been a big object of concern in the media and elsewhere. Within the armed forces, it's not the concern, because what they want from people who play video games, and the reason they like people that play video games, is because they think, or, you know, and research shows this too, video games, the complex wants to, they give you the ability to sort of channel switch and process enormous amounts of data being thrown at you. And they think that translates well into the modern battlefield today, where it is chaotic and there are, you know, several different channels of information coming at you. So people that have the ability to sort of work through that and sort out the important bits from the jumble are the kinds of people they want to have.
And speaking of the other branches of the military, This is a high-tech world. A lot of what happens in the armed forces isn't an infantry platoon on the battlefield. What are some of the higher-tech simulations that they're using?
The high-tech, within the simulations they've been using, the high-tech questions are more about how realistic can we get it, and what's the amount of realism we need to make this an effective training tool, right? So it's issues of what they call scalability when it comes to the games. So how realistic does the explosion need to be to get you to react in the way that you might react on the battlefield to an explosion, right? And so the higher tech applications become with more and more fidelity in terms of the visuals.
But as opposed to the infantry simulations you're talking about, how about helicopters, planes, ships, that sort of thing? Are we seeing a lot of simulations?
There's definitely all those. I don't know if they're any more technologically complex. I would say the most technologically complex stuff they're doing is when they're combining the virtual with the live in large what are called shoot houses. So you're actually inside like a warehouse with digital flats around you where images are being projected. So it's this combination of the two that's their ultimate, what they want for training. That's what the military would love. I mean, because of reasons of space and money, they're only going to get that on a limited basis, but that's the ideal.
Now, taking it back to where you started coming from, you found that the technologies and the methods being used in the military are inspiring and spinning off into use in schools. What kind of spinoffs are you seeing there?
Well, there was the fact that just, and we can take this back further, that educational technology in general the military has been the biggest funder of it for the past several decades. And so there have been a lot of applications developed for the military that have been spun off into the schools. In terms of how to use the video games, it's the very fact of treating games in a serious way in the first place and looking at what the learning principles behind games are that are being adapted by the schools. There's also ways in which the military is actually trying to get its recruiting games into the schools for recruitment purposes. That's happened with America's Army, and that's happening now with some of the cyber stuff. That it's, again, this issue of how do we get the Army brand in front of kids who are 12 and 13. So if we want them to go into cyber occupations and cyber defense and security, they might come to us instead of going to whatever, Silicon Valley is paying for the same skills. It's obviously a battle that's a difficult one for them to win because Silicon Valley can pay salaries that the Army can't. But it's the sort of process that happened 12 years ago all over again, but now with cyber.
So for non-military teaching applications in schools, what are some of the programs you're seeing spring up, maybe inspired by the technology, inspired by what we learned about learning from video games in the military, and being learned to use to teach non-military topics in schools?
I think the games that are the most effective they've found so far are games where it's not about the content per se, right? Not a game to teach you facts and figures per se, but games that let you take on the persona of whatever you're trying to learn about. So a biology game, you take on the avatar of a biologist, and the idea is to get you to learn how to think like whatever that particular individual is. So that's been more effective. So the games that have been in the sort of content-based disciplines like history, a really good early game for teaching that was this game called Civilization, where you actually have to build a civilization. Or another good place has been urban planning, where you actually are doing, building things. Because, again, these require you to take on the roles of a doer, not just someone who's sitting there getting this information kind of dumbed down your throat that you have to then regurgitate later.
And that's back to the idea that you started the show off with, how to get kids excited and interested in learning something
right,
if we can't get them to crack a book for an hour.
Right.
So, Corey, very interesting stuff. Thanks a lot for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
That was Corey Mead. His new book is Warplay, Video Games and the Future of Armed Conflict. Well, do you see applications for this in the classroom or the military? You can post on the Central Time Facebook page. That's Central Time on WPR. Or was there a video game, a computer game that got you or your kid interested in learning more about a subject and thinking like the ruler of a civilization? And that's what led me to pull my first all-nighters ever, I think, was when the Civilization computer game came out.
The first of many, I'm sure.
Yeah. Unfortunately, very few of them were actually academically oriented, mostly computer game oriented.